You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good team?
Well, we said these would be three games without Russell Wilson to learn about this Seahawks team, to learn about their roster, to learn about their scheme, to learn about their heart. What'd you learn after one of them? Yeah, they lost last night, for sure. Offense showed something in the second half, certainly with the run game. Defense only allowed 20 points and played a lot better than it has. Heart, they showed plenty of that. So what'd you learn about the Seahawks last night? 206-421-3776. I want to give you guys a turn. I've been kind of squawking away all day. And Pete Carroll, 30 minutes from now, some really good stuff on there. His answer on Cam Newton, you should hear. His answer on the running game we've been playing throughout the morning. His answer on DK Metcalf is important. So stick around. It's really good stuff with Pete coming up in 30 minutes. Let's hear from you guys, starting with Greg, who's in Mill Creek. Good morning, Greg. What'd you learn last night?
Good morning. Good morning, Mike. What I learned last night is that we are no different than we were 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4, 5, 6 years ago. With Pete Carroll at the helm, I mean, there's absolutely no intelligence. There's a one-dimensional thinking that it seems to go towards our offense. In a modern NFL, you score points by moving a defense. And when you're single-handedly fixed on only running the ball, you're missing the chance of, hey, what is the defense giving us? What are we taking away? I mean, their first touchdown was all running plays, 9 out of 10, I think. Mm-hmm. Second touchdown was a great mix of play action. Now that you can show that you can do both, how do you effectively mix that based on what Pittsburgh's going to give you? And once again, Pete Carroll handcuffs his offensive coordinator and says, well, now we're going to go back and go run, and then third and long.
I don't know if I saw that that way, Greg. I appreciate the call, and I know what you're saying. I don't know that I saw it that way. I saw Pete. Pete wants to run the ball, but he wants balance. He is not, I don't think Pete believes that we're, you know, supposed to be 3 yards in a cloud of dust like it's 1953.
I think he does.
Well, but what happened after, you just said it yourself, after the one successful drive establishing the run, they did work in the play action. They did balance it. They did take what the defense gave them. I mean, they continued to have some success even after that moment.
But then they went right back once you got to later in the fourth quarter and the overtime. We had a couple different drives, opportunities. We went to the same thing, run up the middle.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing going sideways. There's nothing to move a defense.
I guess I disagree with some of that. They had Gerald Everett early in the game with the little tight end play to try to move him, the little jet sweep thing. Right after the turnover, they had what looked to be a beautiful 20-yard run for Alex Collins, and it gets called back because of a hold that Chris Collinsworth thought was a bad call. So I don't know. I appreciate what you're saying. Everyone gets an opinion on this, and that certainly is a valid way of looking at it. I think ultimately I disagree, but I think it's a valid way of looking at it. 206-421-3776. Simple question. What'd you learn last night, Andrew and Graham?
Hey, Mike. So first, I want to pick a bone with you.
Oh, good.
I called in a few years ago. You and Brock had a contest, and one of the questions you had was if you could ask Pete one question, what would it be?
Okay.
And you weren't willing to put me on the board, and I was fine with that because as the only time I'd called in, I texted a bunch, but you said I had the best question, and it was what happened to Thomas Rawls?
Mm.
And you promised, because I'm not putting you on the board.
Yes.
I will make sure.
We've asked him.
I've asked Pete that question.
Maybe
I haven't heard it.
I didn't get much of an answer, unfortunately.
You and Brock went off the air.
I know.
Did the podcast.
Yes.
So, anyways, from what I picked up yesterday's game, unfortunately, I couldn't give it the full dedication I wanted because I'm preparing for a trip leaving tomorrow. But the second half looked so much better. And I think it's because they were doing something that Pittsburgh was not anticipating.
Mm.
And the Seahawks were looking stagnant. It's because they're constantly running out the same style of plays. When Thomas Rawls did come in as the starting back, it was let's run the ball. And I think that's why Rawls didn't look that good. And then all of a sudden they started throwing the ball, and Wilson looked like this genius. And
I understand what you're saying. Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for the phone call, Andrew. And I'm just going to try to buzz through a few others here. But I get what you're saying, that it's the element of surprise that you need to find ways to do the unexpected. And that when the Seahawks offense has struggled the most, it does look predictable. I didn't think it looked predictable yesterday. Even once they started running the ball, they ran it a whole bunch of different ways. I thought that was part of the reason for the success. 206-421-3776. What'd you learn? What'd you learn about the Seahawks? We said this was going to be a learning experience without Russell Wilson. Last night was your first glimpse of it. What'd you learn? I know what Pete learned. Again, I'll play you this sound over and over again because I think it's that important. We'll hear the whole interview coming up in a few minutes. But Pete Carroll learned that that's the way they move the ball best.
That's how we needed to play. That's how we need to play for the next couple of weeks and on into the season. And really, Mike, that's how we've played when we're at our best for years. And there's a lot of people that want to, you know, gripe and complain about, you know, running the football and all that. But you saw, we scored 20 points in the second half. How many points do you need to score? I mean, 40 points in a game, that's pretty good, you know. We did it by controlling the football game with the strength of our team.
Let's grab Dan, who's in Woodinville. Dan, go ahead. What'd you learn?
Hey, yeah, I learned, like, in the midst of all the drama of, is he stubborn, is he old school, that is, and do we need to let Russ cook? I learned that I am intrigued and interested in seeing the type of creativity that Shane Waldron can use to modernize Pete's old school running game. Dang, some of those play calls were great, and I'm happy to be balanced football. I just don't want to watch, like, stupid run calls up the middle where you don't have the player to just barrel people over like Marshawn did, so you need the creativity.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have enough. You got a couple weeks right now without Russ, which gives you time to actually install it with enough repetition that when Russ comes back, you should be able to keep it going, like balance. So anyway, I learned that there's room to modernize the run game, and I think Shane's going to be really important here the rest of the season.
I appreciate the phone call. Is that a baby we got in the background there, Dan? What's going on back there?
Just dropped the 4-year-old off at preschool, got the 2-year-old in the back.
There we go.
Trying to keep him quiet with fishies.
How's that working?
not the best.
There you go. Thanks for the phone call, man. We appreciate it, even while dealing with the 2-year-old in the backseat. I couldn't do that when Cecily was 2. No way.
She'd be
screaming in the back. She'd just be screaming. There was some creativity in the running game. Just because you run the ball doesn't mean it has to be boring. Just because you run the ball doesn't mean it has to be old school. This is something Brock has taught me over the years, is that there's, and this is what the Niners and Kyle Shanahan have been given so much credit for, and even the Rams to an extent. The various creative ways they have found to expand the running game, to put pressure on the defense, to make people make difficult decisions defensively, because of the various schemes you can use in both your blocking and in the action you have in the backfield, there are lots of ways to make the running game creative. I thought they did a good job of that yesterday. 206-421-3776, Rich in Mukilteo. Rich, what did you learn about the Seahawks last night?
That the Seahawks are just a mediocre team, and people in Seattle have this dream or whatever, that just like the Mariners in 95 and 2001, we hang on to crap for so long and we think it's the same. Seattle's a mediocre team. And unless something changes drastically, that's all we'll be. And for some reason, we kind of accept it. And Pete Carroll always chants like he's sitting in Malibu with a surfboard that everything's peachy. You can lose a game in the first, second, and third quarter when you get yourself in a hole so deep. So why not put 20 points per quarter or strive to have that goal instead of just a fourth quarter? So how about just play a complete game?
Well, I think he does. I think he would agree playing a complete game works. And I Rich is a longtime caller. Obviously, we've talked to Rich and Mukilteo any number of times. Look, the record says they're mediocre, if that. There's no doubt. I think it's a little unfair to be putting that on them, though, over the last however many years. They've been in the playoffs every year but one, and I think they won 10 or 11 games that year. 10 games? So I don't know whether I want to call them mediocre. They've gone to the playoffs every year. I think the roster's been mediocre. I think you have two greats in Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson, and they've found ways to throw lipstick on the roster on occasion.
Sounds like he bought the same jump to conclusions, Matt, that you and Mora might have got last week.
He may have.
Not willing to go that far, week to week.
He's got it. 206-421-3776. Joel. Whoa, that was quite the sound. Joel, sorry about that. You're in Olympia. What's going on, man?
How's it going?
What'd you learn?
Long time listener.
All right, buddy.
Yeah, I'm really we got emergency in Seattle. We need a quarterback. We got great ones sitting there on the waiver wire.
Who do you want?
Call up
Cam?
The Chicago Bears.
Okay.
The Chicago Bears. Who's over there? Nick Foles.
Oh.
Pick him up. Beg him. Beg him. Whatever you have to do, get him. Or if you get really desperate, get Cam Newton.
Okay.
And the other guy, he's been on the bench. He said you wake up at 5 a.m. every morning. That's Kaepernick. We need a quarterback.
All right, Joel.
We won't make it without a quarterback. We cannot rely on this guy.
I appreciate it.
What happened last night was it's not acceptable. We won't make it in the playoffs. We need emergency quarterback.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. There you go. There's Joel in Olympia. He's throwing the blame on Geno Smith and says we need a quarterback. I don't know that I can disagree that we need a quarterback. What? Oh, I do. I do have to. Darn it. More. I screwed it up. I thought I had more time. I got to go to break. Darn it. I was having so much fun talking to everybody. All right. I screwed this up. We got to go to break. We'll tell you what you need to know, and then we'll have Pete Carroll at 9:30. I'm sorry. I messed up the clocks. It's Mike's fault. That's what I learned today. I'm an idiot. Need to know next.
You're listening to the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
We've been playing the sound from Pete Carroll interview all morning. Hear his comments on not just the running game, but on Cam Newton, health of Alex Collins, Rashad Penny, a whole lot more. You're going to want to stick around for Pete. Coming up in just over 10 minutes. Right now, let's tell you what you need to know.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
On one hand, you have efforts. On the other hand, results. And unfortunately, there was a stark contrast between them yesterday. Seahawks had the effort. What'd you learn about the Seahawks? Well, one of the biggest things I learned is that they're not ready to give up. Pete Carroll had them playing hard, especially in the second half, down two scores. Without their best player in Russell Wilson, they dug deep. They ran the football. They found something to give them life and get them back into the game, which is great and important. Ultimately, though, results on the other side, the reality hit them. They fall in overtime 23-20 in Pittsburgh. Again, the good news, I think they seem to have at least found some sort of commitment to an identity. And for them and for Pete Carroll, that's the running game. Alex Collins running for 101 of their 144 on the ground before leaving with an injury. When they ran it well, it opened up some plays in the passing game. But again, reality for the second straight week, Geno Smith's night ended with a turnover, this time a fumble at the hands of TJ Watt. Cam Newton says he's vaccinated. I'm certainly interested in the conversation. I'll ask Pete about it in a few minutes. Scary moment. Both teams gathering on the field after Daryl Taylor went down with a neck injury, had to be immobilized and carted straight to the hospital. Fortunately, good news, CT scan clear, and he was able to travel home with the team last night. Elsewhere, Cardinals still unbeaten. They had a big day against Baker Mayfield and the Browns. They were great offensively, defensively, you know it, 37-14. The final there looked very good against a decent opponent. Rams dominate the Giants 38-11. 130 receiving for Cooper Kupp. Daniel Jones sacked four times and threw three picks. Seahawks now, what, four games back in the division. They're 2-4. Rams 5-1. Cardinals 6-0.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Crazy weekend for the local college teams, but we'll see what happens next. Let's start on the field. Huskies came back to make it a game late against UCLA, but they give it up 24-17. The final blow with a touchdown just over 8 minutes left, and they were not able to score again. They're now 2-4 in the year, 1-2 in the conference. Cougs seem to be going in the opposite direction, and I'll stress the word seam. They do beat Stanford 34-31, get to 4-3 in the year. 89 yards, pair of touchdowns for Max Borgi, including the game winner. 289 and three scores for Jaden Delora at quarterback. Seems like they found their guy. Stanford, of course, scores two touchdowns in the fourth quarter to take the lead. I'm sure every Cook fan was thinking deja vu all over again. But they do come back and get the win. Will Nick Rolovich come back, though, and coach the team again? By all accounts, it's unlikely. Today is the state deadline for all public employees to be vaccinated. Rolovich has said he will not do that. He has appealed for a religious exemption. It's possible that could be accepted, though I believe most think it will not be. So we are tracking that. No information yet on whether or not Nick Rolovich will continue to coach the Cougs.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, we got our first taste of overtime hockey this weekend. Kraken gave up a late lead in Columbus and then lost in overtime. Now, hockey does give out partial credit. You do get 1 point for an overtime loss, 2 points for a win. So there's some decent news in there. It's left over from the days where games ended in ties. Now they play this 3-on-3 overtime, which I'm sure some people like. I don't. I know it leads to some scoring, and that's the goal, to open things up for the players and show off some of the skill. But honestly, to me, it would be like an NFL overtime where you decided to go 7-on-7. It's just a different game. First of back-to-back games tonight. First in Philly, 4 o'clock this afternoon. By all accounts, Philip Grubauer, again, the first goalie off the ice this morning. So he will likely make his, what, fourth straight start in net. Back-to-back games, so maybe tomorrow in New Jersey, we'll get our first look at Chris Driedger. Quick look at the postseason schedule here in Major League Baseball. Braves up 2-0. They win last night on a walk-off single from Eddie Rosario. Astros, Red Sox tied 1-1, heading back to Boston tonight. And congratulations to the Chicago Sky. They win their first WNBA championship last night.
I got a lot of NHL overtime questions that are probably going to have to wait until tomorrow.
Okay.
But I will tell you, it took me about 5 seconds to realize I do not like the NHL overtime 3-on-3.
Stressful, right?
I was like, what is going on? Where is everybody? Why is this happening? Why are you playing suddenly a different game than you played the last 60 minutes?
Yeah, it's weird. It's wide open. They sometimes like actively take the puck out of the offensive zone themselves in order to kind of wind up with more speed. It really is like it's a totally different game.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not really a fan of it, but I understand they're trying to.
Can we take a second to give a little love for Brandon Tanev's goal?
Yes.
That was awesome.
How is Brandon Tanev leading the team in goals? It's bizarre.
I don't know.
I can't imagine that'll last, but give the guy some credit. All right. Hey, I want to make sure people are listening to this. Pete Carroll, some really important stuff from him. We taped the interview early this morning. We're going to play it for you next. You're going to want to hear what he has to say about the offense. You're going to want to hear about the running game and how he thinks it affects them now moving forward. He talked about Russell. He talked about Jamal Adams. He was asked and answered a question about Cam Newton, which may surprise you. Don't go anywhere. You want to listen to Pete Carroll. It's coming up next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
The Pete Carroll Show. The first word from the Seahawks head coach every Monday at 9:30 with Mike Salk. Brought to you by Pizza Hut on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Well, good morning, Coach. We appreciate you being with us this morning. I know we'll talk about the game, obviously, and I want to jump right into it. Before we do, I wanted to start with Daryl Taylor just because it was such a scary scene last night. It sounded like there was some decent news last night. How is he doing this morning?
Yeah, he really did get a great report on his CAT scans that he was clear and all that. He's got more tests to do just to double check and triple check and make sure he's okay, MRIs and stuff today. But the initial return is that, you know, he didn't have any major damage at all, and he feels good. I talked to him just a few minutes ago, and he's got a sore neck right now, you know, stiff neck a little bit. But he really feels, you know, relative to what it looked like and what we were, you know, having to deal with, he really got a great turnaround, great news.
What caused them to go into the protocol? What is it that leads to that?
He immediately, you know, was talking about his neck. You know, he talked about, you know, he got his neck hyperextended or got jammed, and he, you know, and so they immediately go into you know, isolating the movement, and that's just leads them down a path where they've got to, you know, you got to go for it. And he was so adamant about getting up and wanting to get off the ground and did not want to get carted off, and the whole thing, he was just battling, and we were all just loving him up and just trying to calm him down so that, you know, that wasn't the time to compete in that manner, you know. But that's what his nature told him to do, and you got to admire the heck out of him. He was tough as nails.
I mean, does that make it realistic he could return even as soon as this week? Is that a possibility?
I don't know what to say about that. Give us another couple of days here of tests and stuff, and we'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Good. Well, good news.
Really good news. Yeah, really good news.
What did you take from the game?
Well, what a game, man. What our guys were amazing. You know, let me answer a bigger question that you haven't asked yet, that, you know, where are we and what are we feeling like and all that. You know, this start is painful. It's painful. We've not been here, you know, and that we've not, and maybe there was a time, I don't know, 10 years ago or something like that, but it's a painful start, but so that our people that, you know, that love us and follow us and all, our guys are not beaten. They're not like hapless about what's going on. They just showed you who they are and what they're all about. This season is going to take a lot longer than we would like to figure out what it's all about. And the start has just put us behind the eight ball a little bit. It just means it's just going to take a long time. And so, our guys are going to approach it with the right mentality to keep battling and make the opportunity come available to us by the way we fight our way through it. And just like we fought our way through that game, it's not any different. And that's the nature of our club and our organization, and we're not going to be anything different than that. But it, you know, it's just going to take us 2 months. We're not going to know anything for eight, ten weeks before really what the season's all about. And that means that if we can project and you know, withhold judgment and just keep battling, a lot of stuff's going to happen and scenarios will take shape, and then we'll see what, you know, how good can the Cardinals be? You know, can they really do it or not? You know, if they can put together a great season, or are they going to run into their issues too? Issues are just around the corner. I mean, they're just a flash away. You know, they're one throw away, you know, from what's going on. And so meanwhile, we just have to keep digging in, and that's what we're going to do. You know, I look forward to that challenge and fighting our way through it. I was so proud of the way the guys responded. It was a beautiful comeback.
What happened at halftime? Because you came out certainly like a different team offensively.
It was a significantly marked halftime. You know, I was so freaking pissed that we had started that game like that, knowing that we needed to take care of our new quarterback, and we needed to run the football, and we didn't get that accomplished, you know, and so we just declared we're turning it, and you saw exactly what happened, and our guys up front took the game over, and both sides of the ball played great football to give us a chance to win the game, and legitimately the chance to have the game won, and we would have made a heroic comeback, but it was significant at halftime,
You say pissed, I mean that's not a word I generally associate with you. I mean you're a fairly optimistic guy. Does that mean you were angry with them? You showed it. You flipped a Gatorade table. I mean, what does that mean?
Well, I'm not telling you everything that happened. But I was mad that I wasn't able. I didn't get it done. I knew what we needed to do in this game, and we needed to be really balanced and run the football and take the pressure off of Geno having to stand back there and drop back and throw the ball against a wicked pass rush, you know, and that was, it didn't show up in you know, and we didn't get it done, and situations call for, you know, to try to battle for the next first down and all of that, and we just didn't get it accomplished, and then we did. You know, you saw us. That's how we needed to play. That's how we need to play for the next couple of weeks and on into the season. And really, Mike, that's how we've played when we're at our best for years. And there's a lot of people that want to, you know, gripe and complain about, you know, running the football and all that. But you saw, we scored 20 points in the second half. How many points do you need to score? I mean, 40 points in a game, that's pretty good, you know. And we did it by controlling the football game with the strength of our team. I thought let me start first with the offensive line. They were phenomenal. They controlled the game, and they've been waiting. And Alex was phenomenal in his effort. He made so many 4 and 5 and 6 yard runs, just, you know, by his cuts and his instincts and all of that. And then you could see that DJ ran behind that line too, and so did Homer. You know, everybody could run behind because those guys did such a fantastic job, and they're there. They're ready for us, and so we need to let them really kind of seize this opportunity to get our season on track and balance this out.
What'd you learn about Geno last night?
He was competing his tail off. He was calm. He was poised. He was in control. He handled everything really well, and throughout the whole thing, and he was so upset that it comes down and he loses the football right at the end there, you know. And really, you know, when you look right at it, Geno had terrible ball security as he ducked up in there. I mean, we don't let anybody run with the football like that, and he'll see it. You know, he had the ball like he's carrying, you know, a loaf of bread, like they say, you know, and he got it knocked out. They can knock it out anyway, but we don't ever want to look like that. And so, unfortunately, that got us. But he gave us a chance. You know, he took us right down there when we had to in a minute 30, and gave us a chance to put the game into OT and the whole thing.
What'd you make of Ross yesterday? He was out there. He did his full routine. We got to see the in the huddle 2-minute drill and everything he did pregame, and then somehow managed. How did he manage to find himself on the field for the coin toss?
Yeah, that's just, he could, so we did it, you know, and he makes all those choices for us, and why would we not use the strength of his, you know, his experience there? So that was it. But what he got done, no, you've never seen anybody do what he did. I mean, he went through probably 200 plays, you know, before the game, and he actually did them. I mean, he went right through the whole process of it, calling it in the huddle, making the adjustments, just like he was talking. He was, you know, talking to the players that he would normally talk to and making the adjustments and the changes and the things like that. And that his focus throughout that time is what he's done in practice, you know, around the practice field as well. And he will not lose a step in preparation for the time when he comes back.
We talked a little bit last week here about some other, you know, you brought in Blake Bortles for an interview or for a look last week. Are there others scheduled? Cam Newton said he was vaxxed as of yesterday. Is Cam somebody you would talk to?
Well, just so that you know, we've already talked to him. You know, we're talking to everybody that could help us, you know, and to go right back to the base philosophy that we always, you know, we uphold here is that, you know, we're going to be competing at every turn with whoever would be available. And so we're on it.
How'd those conversations go?
They're all right.
Okay, good. All right. Let's go to the other side of the ball a little bit. Talk through this defense. What did you see? Because, you know, we spent a lot of time the last few weeks talking about this one concept and issues in the passing game with
put it to rest.
Yeah,
totally.
I mean, was it gone?
Yeah. We
did they run those same concepts and you defended them well, or did they not run them as much?
They had it. They did show it. Yeah, but we defended stuff really well, and the adjustments that you know, Kenny and the staff had to make, they got it done with the players. The players did a really good job of it. And we put these guys under control, I thought, throughout the night. You know, we had, you know, they had a touchdown series, and then they had one we messed up with a couple things that happened that got them their two scores, you know. And other than that, I thought the guys played really well. You know, that's a pretty well-oiled offense, you know, with Ben and how he does it in the running game and how he plays his style. And I thought our guys really adapted really well to it.
It's Trey Brown.
I thought the corners played really good too. I was really pleased with their play, and particularly DJ had a terrific game. But Trey Brown, like, you're just going to bring him up.
Yeah.
He was good.
He's feisty,
really,
huh?
He was really, Mike, he's been on it. I mean, I've said this a number of times to everybody that there's no plays in his background with us in practice and in the scrimmages and in preseason, the few plays that he had in the games that weren't really consistently tuned up. And he went out and did exactly that. That's exactly the way he's been looking in practice. So that's a big statement for us. And it comes at a good time. We need him to be competitive and be out there. So he'll have a chance to play a lot. Moving forward,
I heard you say after the game that some of the issues with the pass rush were maybe with the way you were forced to defend their running game and some of the things they like to do in the RPO. But what can you do to generate more pressure on quarterbacks?
Well, this is Ben doesn't let you do it. He doesn't let you rush him. The ball's out too fast, and you can't get there. He knows. I mean, he's 39 years old. He's been playing this game for 18 years. He's not going to let you get to him. And if it's a fluke when you do, almost. And the style is so fast, but it's not fast in his drop back game. It's because of the run pass thing, the RPO thing that you RPOs. If you teach the fans what that is, that's a running play that the quarterback has the chance to throw the football as well. If he doesn't like the run look versus his pass opportunities with the real quick passing game. And so the ball comes out right now. And the few times that Ben pulled the ball to throw it and couldn't throw it, they had guys downfield, and when we stopped them, and it worked out fine for us. We didn't get the advantage of all of that, but we really handled it really well. And so that's that game. Let's go to the next one.
How about Jamal? How did he play yesterday?
He's all over the place. He was making hits all over the place. He had a chance to make a big pick that he just didn't play the ball. He was playing the receiver to make the hit and didn't see the ball coming, I don't think. He was zeroing in on the guy, and that was a really big opportunity. I mean, he would give anything to have that chance back because the ball was right to him, you know, and can't be more so. But, you know, we missed that opportunity, which was really at a time when we could have iced the game, I think.
It seems like you used him more around the line of scrimmage, at least to my eyes. Was that part of the plan? Is that a
yes.
Steelers thing, or is that something that you got to do?
Just moving. No, just we got to do. We're just moving ahead. I thought he played really well, and he was very active. He fit the new things that we did. He did them exactly the way the plan called for it. We sent him a number of times when he didn't get home, but he did cause some problems and he had a good game.
Are there other guys on that defense playing well that maybe we're not noticing? I mean, you know, are there people that are, you know, maybe doing more than I would notice sitting at home?
Well, it's hard to probably appreciate like Puna Ford. You know, he's really a solid football player. Al Woods does a really good job in his role of being the big dude in the middle. Those guys give us real consistent play up front, and it all starts right in the middle and works its way out. You know, so but they, you know, just to pick out a couple guys.
Did you talk to DK after his final play there with the fumble on the sideline?
I haven't talked to him about that play, but I was, you know, communicating with DK during the game. He cramped up a little bit in this one, you know. This was kind of like the Minnesota game. A number of guys cramped up. So there's something going on here with the trip that we got to take care of guys better than we are. I think there's something in the forest that maybe enhanced the hydration part of it. You know, it's a big factor. You're in the planes, you're in the hotels, and it's all air conditioned and all that stuff, you know, and that's what sucks the fluids out of you. And we have to maybe with some guys in particular do a better job. But, DK was, you know, he was, I got a chance to get after him though. He was loose with the ball on the one that came out.
I just don't understand what's the goal there. I mean, isn't he right by the sideline and you're just trying to get out of bounds? Why is he fighting for extra yards?
Because he's a competitor, Mike. What do you want him? That's what he's going to do. I mean, he was going to get out of bounds. I think he'd have bounced his way out. I think at the time he was right there, but the ball got punched before he got to finish the play. You know, the ball was a little vulnerable, and obviously they're really good at it, and they got him. You know, but it was a fantastic. That whole sequence was amazing. You know, the there's a lot to talk about. You know, I know it's really early in the morning for us, and people don't realize it's like 5 o'clock or something when we're doing this.
We're taping this a little early today.
Yeah, but there's a lot of stuff to talk about, and a fantastic play by Freddie Swain to put us back in the flow of that play and the moments and the seconds that we gained right there to give us a chance to hook up a tie-up, you know, tie-in field goal.
Let's go through just a couple of the other injuries just to see where people are at. Alex Collins, you said, got hurt?
Yeah, he got hit a couple times. He had a couple big hits that he took, but the reports are getting that, you know, we'll see in a couple days from now. He got banged around in all that he put out there, but he's not out of the next week. You know, we got to see how he handles it.
And the expectation is Rashad Penny could be back next week.
Rashad Penny is back. He'll be back full speed, ready to roll on Tuesday when we get back out of here.
How about Damian Lewis?
He's got a sore shoulder. Yeah, he hurt his shoulder a little bit, and we'll have to wait and see. I mean, he's really tough, and will, you know, he'll shrug it off if he can, but he's pretty sore tonight.
It's not game-related, but we have just a couple of minutes here, and this conversation could probably go a lot longer than that, but the John Gruden stuff that came out over last week and, you know, just watching some of the reaction to it around the league. I don't know if you heard Coach Brandon Staley's comments in LA. He really spoke quite eloquently about leadership and about what it means and talking about the situation. You must have obviously seen what happened. What did you think about it, and where did your mind go as all of that went down last week?
That the world has changed, you know, and times have changed, and fortunately we're evolving into a new awareness that's really, really crucial that we get it. And the guys, the men and women that are in leadership positions, we have a real responsibility to act in accordance with the moving times. And if we don't, then we're not supporting really the evolution of our the culture that we live in. And we have to do a great job of that. It's to me, Mike, it's always been so important to me to treat people where and all people deserve to be treated well and equally. And doesn't matter what your persuasion, to make reference to people in disparaging ways and all that is so backwards for us right now. This is, and we just can't tolerate it. And we got to learn, got to grow. And in that, there's a huge job for us to shift the culture and shift the awareness and how we understand differences and love the fact that people are different and all that. I mean, there's a lot to it. So,
Well, it was a heck of a comeback yesterday, Coach. We appreciate you taking some time early this morning. Yes, we taped before the show today, so this is about as early as it gets for either one of us.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming right in off the plane. We appreciate it. Good luck this week. Long week with a Monday night game. We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
All right, Mike. Thank you.
All right, there you go. That was Coach Carroll. And, done a little early. We taped before the show and had to run so that we could actually start the show. So usually about another 3 or 4 minutes we get with B. Carroll that wasn't able to do today. But let's run through some of what was important there, because I think there's 3 or 4 things that stand out to me and some real legitimate, I think, newsy stuff in there. First of all, the good news, Daryl Taylor. The fact that he was clear that he was out there saying he didn't even want to be strapped in on the gurney and all of it. I think that really runs contrary to what it looked like sitting there at home in the living room last night. And I don't mean just, I mean, look, obviously it's scary anytime they do that, but we know that the precautions sometimes, it happened with Michael Bennett a couple of years ago, right? They did the full thing and he was essentially fine. I think it was the look on the players' faces, Bobby's face, Jamal's face, a few of the other guys, just like, man, it didn't look good. So really good news to hear that the CT scan was okay, that he flew back with the team, and that even on the field in that moment, he was able to move and saying, no, I want to get up. I think that's great, and hopefully he'll be good to go, good as new.
And the defense knew, is like, well, he's also having a pretty decent game.
No,
so this
kidding.
This is double shot for us.
Yeah, you kind of get the lifestyle, like the life human part of it, but then also like, dude, they kind of need him. He's their only good pass rusher right now.
Well, and I think now that obviously we were concerned that it could be something serious, like affecting his mobility. Once you rule that out, I was also worried that it could be a stinger, because we've seen those have lingering issues, obviously, on this team before with Cliff Averill and Cam Chancellor. And
So
it sounds like it's not even that.
Hopefully.
You know, they're doing more tests, but yeah, very encouraging.
Good news. So that's number one. Number two, they talked to Cam. And for everybody out there, well, I don't want him and I don't like him and I'd rather lose 12 games in a row than talk to Cam Newton. Well, Pete disagrees with you, and so does John Schneider, so does the Seahawks organization. If I want to put Pete's comments, Pete says we talked to him, and Cam said, what was it? Cam? I got to play you Cam again. I got the Cam sound here. Hold on. Let me see if I can find it. I clicked off the page. Cam Newton says that he is talking to teams and has had phone calls, but that he hasn't found the right fit. Here's Cam.
Two things with that. Number one, hell yeah, I want to still play football. I got the vaccination. You're probably asking yourself, don't nobody want Cam? That's a lie. I've been getting offers. But the realization of it is it has to be right.
Has to be the right fit, right? You're probably asking yourself, don't anybody want Cam?
That's a lie.
Don't nobody want Cam.
I mean, Cam's always had a funny way with words, as we know. I mean, isn't he the one who said hindsight is 50-50? I mean, Cam's got so many great quotes over the – I mean, the way my leg was. Cam's a unique human being. But Pete says they talk to him and puts him in the category of people that could help them. I agree. I think Cam could help them.
You sure you don't want to go with, what was it, our guy Rich in Olympia and call Nick Foles?
I don't know whether I want to start throwing more resources in the trade market at anybody. But Cam Newton's out there for free. Yeah, I would absolutely call Cam. I'd call Philip Rivers, too. Absolutely. If those guys are available, yeah, you should be making those phone calls to see if there's a fit. And I think you saw Geno Smith. You can say all the positive things you want about Geno the person. He's thrown an interception and coughed up a fumble to lose the last two games at the end. That's not to say they were good. It's not to say he's entirely at fault, but the game ended with him turning the ball over in both games.
And the first one you said, I remember you tweeted, like, he robbed us of the opportunity to see if he could get it done. Did you feel that way last night?
No, he had his opportunity. He had it on the drive before that. He got sacked on third down when they were almost in field goal range. No, I don't think I got robbed. I think I've now seen for two games what Geno Smith is. He's a nice guy and he's a decent backup. And if Cam Newton's available, I'd rather have him. So that's number two. Number three, Collins should be able to play, potentially. At the very least, he's not being ruled out yet for the game, and that Rashad Penny is active. No, he is active, Pete says. So that one's definitive. We should get a chance
to see.
For now. Yeah, not for now. He is active. We're going to see Rashad Penny practice.
I really
this week.
Hope so. Like, I really want to see that.
Rashad Penny is active.
Nobody wants us to be right more than
100 yards coming this week. And then again, I've played the sound I don't know how many times today, but I do think it's huge. Pete saying that this is how you have the most success and how they've had success in the past and what they need to do moving forward to run the football, to have success through that balanced offensive attack. So, you know, I'm sure Jake and Stacey are going to be talking about that and some other things coming up in a moment. I want to hear the reaction from Jake when he hears that, because you know, how does Russ handle that? How does Russ handle hearing, you know, we can have success not only while he's out, but once he's back, trying to run the football? I think there's a lot in there, man. So good stuff. Great. Thank you to Pete for coming on this morning. They did play with heart. I thought Pete did coach a really good game to get them back into it and to keep them playing hard. But it is a results-based business. You're 2-4. Geno Smith has turned the ball over to end both games he's been in there. So you gotta win the next two games. It's about as close to a must-win as you could possibly have at this stage of the year. You gotta beat New Orleans Monday night. You gotta beat Jacksonville after that. I'll get out of here. I'll turn things over to Jake and Stacey, who are coming up next. We've got a lot to do tomorrow. We'll be taking L's. We'll be getting a little Kraken reaction and continuing to talk through where the Seahawks go from here. Thanks for being here, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow morning, 6 a.m.